Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. Come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space.
And welcome to episode 2 of the Forgot My Dice podcast, the official podcast of ForgotMyDice.com. I'm Jonathan Edwards, your moderator, and with me today is Mr. Robert Lundgren. Robert, how you doing?
Tired. So sleepy.
Which means we have to get the most important part of the show out of the way, and that is Robert has a big announcement. Two big announcements.
So I'm trying to come up with something witty, but it ain't happening. Yeah, the wife and I, we had twins about 2 weeks and 3 days ago at this 15 days. No, wait, 17 days ago.
As promised in the last episode, the twins are here.
The twins are here, and Robert is tired.
And still soldiering on with the podcast.
That's right. So some days are better than others, but last night was a little rough. So if you hear this weird little like squeaking noise, like you know, like some sort of hospital gurney that's just sort of rolling on a weird wheel, it's probably my kid sucking on his pacifier because I'm holding one of them because, you know, two babies requires two adults.
And if Robert sounds a little funny, that's because we are recording over Skype tonight. So apologies for any audio kerfuffles that may occur during tonight's episode. But we just wanted to get back to the business of getting you guys content.
Yeah, I could not join Jonathan in the Forgot My Dice headquarters bunker located deep within the Earth. I am in an orbiting satellite. And luckily for you, the 3-minute delay due to the speed of light, we have edited out for you. So you don't have to listen to that. That's right, because we do care. We do care.
So on to the next big important fact, and that was the names, because you kind of teased the names before, and I knew it, and you ended up going with those. So tell us the official names.
My daughter, we ended up naming Eowyn, and the wife and I decided we would not bathe in the same river twice. And so that meant we weren't going to do Aragorn or Aelmir or any of that stuff. We're like, no, we got to do other things. So we started looking at what are our passions. And so obviously we kind of landed on comic books and Star Trek. And comic book names were rough because most comic book characters, if you really look at them, they are not people you want to be like. Like, I know it's a big thing on the internet. It's like, if you can be anything, be Batman. But you don't want to be Batman. That dude's messed up.
No, he's crusty and definitely has a therapy bill in his future.
Yeah. He just needs a hug. So, but, you know, we were searching around, and I've always been a fan of The Flash. You know, the TV show has been really good. That kind of rekindled it, but he's always sort of been on my radar as a character I liked ever since I read the novelization of Crisis on Infinite Earths, which I managed to get somehow on a trip to Vegas. So, yeah, we ended up naming Twin B, as he was known for a very long time, Barry Allen. And then
which is awesome, by the way, because I too am a big fan of The Flash, also rekindled by the TV show. And actually, I went out and started buying individual issues of comics, which I've not done for quite some time.
Nice.
Because it's just so much easier to get the annuals. But at the prompting of a friend who got me the first couple of issues to get me hooked, I am now reading The Flash from the DC Universe Rebirth.
Oh, neat. That's cool. Yeah, I've heard the Rebirth stuff in general has been pretty good, which is nice because the new 52, it had some moments, but most of it was kind of bad from what I hear.
So far, what I've read, I really like. I'm only about halfway through the third issue.
That's cool. I may have to borrow that because I haven't read a Flash comic in a while because, yeah, they were a little bad for a while. Although I liked Flash Rebirth. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good classic Flash stories. So to go to Star Trek, we kind of had the same problem because, you know, Star Trek, as cool as James Kirk is, one, that name's way, way overdone. And also,
a man desperately in need of therapy.
Yeah. Also back when I owned the shop, you know, we had a magic event once where we literally had 11 Jameses in it. So we're like, you know, we don't, I'm sorry if your name is James, it's a very fine name, but there are a lot of you out there right now. And we're all like millennials and we're like, oh, we want to do something. We want to do something special. So we started going through the other character names and, my wife and I were both big fans of the Deep Space Nine. And so we were kind of looking at characters in there, and we landed on Chief Engineer Miles O'Brien. And so we named a Twin A, as he was known for a very long time, Miles Brian. So,
and the funny thing is both of them have started to take little aspects of the characters that they're named after.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, Miles has... Miles is a little surly. He was very quick to cry. He's calming down as he's getting older in his 17 days. But yeah, at first he was the one that, you know, if anything new happened, he would just cry about it. He was cantankerous, I guess is a good word. Whereas Barry, after he came out, he just wanted to look around and look at things and, you know, be a little scientist and explore.
So let's get to what we've had off the shelf. And Robert, unfortunately, you haven't had a ton off the shelf. Tell us a little about what you've managed to do.
I'm so tired. Okay, so when you have babies, especially babies that all they want to do is just be on you all the time, just sleep on you. God forbid you put them anywhere, you know, like in a crib or anything, and then they're on you, and they're so sweet because they're so happy to just be sleeping on you. But it means you're just kind of trapped underneath, like, you know, actually with two babies, like right now, like 15 pounds of like dead weight. So I ended up, I've watched a lot of TV. A lot of TV. So in the hospital, I saw the show, which I had cut my cord, so I had never even heard of it. It was called Through the Wormhole, and it's basically I think the gist of it is, you know, Morgan Freeman's a good narrator, and so someone's like, let's get Morgan Freeman on TV narrating stuff. and what they chose to do is sort of this, what they're billing it as is the show that like tackles weird, you know, sort of esoteric thought ideas and sort of tries to take a look at them in a new way or something. A lot of the times it seems like the writing staff was just the History Channel Aliens guy, you know.
I don't want to say aliens, but
it was aliens. Yeah it just seems like a lot of it was that guy. Of course, Morgan Freeman, the soothing sounds of Morgan Freeman lulled me to sleep in the hospital many a time.
Read me legal documents and I'd just be
I'm on
board. Morgan Freeman, I'm with you.
But one of the more, so they, I watched on the Science Channel, and they were having an all night marathon, which was good because my babies were up all night that night. And I was watching it kind of half in and out of consciousness. And most of it, like I said, was kind of eh. But the one that got me that I thought was like, there's something there was, you know, they were like, how if aliens could contact us, how could they do it in a weird way? And, you know, I mean, they were going through some weird BS. Yeah. Well, the one I liked was they're like, maybe they've already contacted us. What if they are downloading computer viruses into our internets? And I'm like, that's actually kind of cool. Like, what if there's a computer virus that's aliens and they're like, send, you know, I guess it's like the plot for Independence Day. So maybe it's not that interesting, but, I don't know. I kind of dug that idea, like alien computer virus. I'm like, that's a twist. If you're, you know, it's like you're playing a role playing game. It's like, God, who's the super hacker? He's always a step ahead of us. This virus he keeps putting in is like, it's alive. And it's like, and then you bring out the History Channel guy and it's like, I don't want to say it's aliens, but aliens.
That actually sounds like something that could happen in the RPG book I just picked up, End of the World, Revolt of the Machines.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, you and I did manage to get one game in. We did. I taught you Seven Wonders Duel.
Yeah. That was like, what, a couple days before the babies came, we managed to squeeze
2 days, I think, before the babies were born.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, we played that one. That was, we'll talk about it later.
Yes.
It was
good. Because Seven Wonders Duel, spoiler alert, is our review game for the show. So we will definitely be talking about it later.
Yeah, we're pitching ourselves a softball here, fellas, because, you know, we got I got baby brain, man. I got baby brain. And then the other thing I've been watching a lot of is I've been plugging through Person of Interest, which is a very good show. I like how they pulled the long con on all the geriatric CBS viewers, you know, where it's like, I'm going to log into the CBSs and watch my procedurals like the CSIs. And the show starts as a procedural crime drama. And then by season four, it's a full on dystopian future sci-fi thing about two godlike AI intelligences battling each other with human agents. And I was like, wow.
See, that's awesome, because I started watching that show and about three quarters of the way through season one, I just got tired of the procedural.
Yeah.
So now I kind of want to go back and finish it because I really like the cast. All right. So has anything else gotten on the table for you?
I've been reading a lot. I've been going through Storm King's Thunder and a few other things. The Adventures of Middle Earth role playing game. The new fifth edition thing. But we'll talk about those in news because those are all kind of current releases.
Fantastic. Well, I've had quite a few things on the table because we've had a little bit of an extended break between episodes. I've been playing the Living Daylights out of Star Realms and Cthulhu Realms, which we've talked about before on the show, and Seven Wonders Duel has become a household favorite because I taught it to Jessica as well, and she's decided that she wants to conquer me on a regular basis in that game, so let me tell you, it's just killing me. I teach her the game, and all of a sudden, I can't win anymore. It's like, really? Really? I'm the professional gamer here, okay? You'll go ahead and lose now, please, please, pretty please? And the worst part is she's beat me in every way possible, which we'll talk about during the review.
Knowing Jessica, I could imagine she's also kind of a bad winner.
Oh my gosh, she's an even worse winner than she is loser. It's terrible. It's terrible. So I had a couple of larger games hit the table recently. Got a game of Scythen, which of course we reviewed in our second pilot episode, back two episodes ago.
Yep.
And let me tell you, every time I play Scythe, that game holds up. And I played it with a couple of guys who I played it with once or twice before. And now that we're all kind of getting to that higher level of mastery, we're just discovering more and more levels that you can do with this game. It's so elegantly designed, and it's just such a pleasure to play every time it comes out on the table.
That makes me jelly. I like that game.
Yeah, the game was phenomenal. If you haven't heard it yet, go back a couple episodes to our second pilot episode and listen to our review of Scythe, because that game is absolutely phenomenal. We all kind of were bonkers over it, and it's so nice that a couple plays down the road, it's still totally holding up.
Yeah, I that's good news, because I had a feeling that game's really good.
In the other big box category, I did pick up a copy of the new Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition.
Ooh.
So they took a page from the release of XCOM, where everybody's working together against an AI opponent that's handled by an iPad app, or an app in general.
Yeah. You were sending me pictures, and I was like, maybe the AI apocalypse is already upon us. It's playing our board games.
Well, it's kind of interesting, because sometimes it feels like you're playing a video game because you're getting this story narrated to you by the app, right? And other times it totally feels like you're playing a board game because you're still chucking dice and you're still making decisions with the other people around the table. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds. And it really kind of came together, and it totally worked for me. I was having a great time with it. And I liked that there wasn't one person excluded.
You know, missed opportunity from Fantasy Flight. They should get Morgan Freeman to narrate that game for you.
Oh, that would be phenomenal. That would be amazing. If anybody from
Morgan
Fantasy
Freeman
Flight
doing
is
Cthulhu,
listening,
that would be amazing.
But it's kind of interesting because, you know, they went back and retrofitted Descent with this system, right? You know, Descent has an AI that you can now download and will run the game from the perspective of the Overlord for you. And so now this game, there is no option to play with a human being the evil. You have to play it 4-player co-op, and that makes it better, in my opinion. It's so much fun to just sit down and work together with your teammates to work through the puzzle of the interaction. I got another new game out called Puzzle Strike, and this is kind of interesting because you remember Street Fighter II, the Puzzle Fighter?
Yeah, the one with the weird gems.
Yeah, with the little chibi Street Fighter guys that are fighting over gems.
Yeah.
Imagine that game translated into poker chips on your board.
Okay.
And that is Puzzle Strike.
Okay, I can see that.
And I didn't think it would translate well, especially when we were setting it up. It was a lot of setup because you've got all these individual little poker chips that have to be separated out. And based on the type of game you're playing, you have to set up different stacks of these chips for the store and whatnot. I totally take it back. It totally worked. It was a ton of fun. And it's a great game with a lot of back and forth with the players, which is really, really neat.
Very cool.
I got a recent Kickstarter receipt, and that was Brass Empires. And so I got that on the table. It's an interesting deck builder. Instead of just one store, there's actually two stores. One of the stores has employees that you can hire, and the other has buildings and units that you can purchase and build. The buildings kind of act like the bases in Star Realms, if you're familiar with those, how they come out and they're semi-permanent, and they're there until they either get destroyed or used up.
What's the theme of Brass Empire?
It's a steampunk. Steampunk. Huh. It's a steampunk theme, beautiful painted art. Everybody plays as an individual corporation, and all the different corporations are trying to get brass. And so basically you're trying to build your deck full of the right employees and units to let you collect the most amount of brass while holding your opponent at bay by doing corporate espionage and sending spies out to destroy their buildings and things like that. And it's got a nice push-pull. It's pretty neat game. I want to play it a couple more times before I really pass a judgment on it, but my initial impressions have been very, very positive. I also got another Kickstarter out on the table, and this one was really fun because I got to play it with Carlos, my oldest, my 9-year-old, and he picked it right up, which is a really good sign because I had a good time with it, and he
so jelly. You're playing games with your kids. Mine's like right there.
Your time will come.
Mine's almost there. My oldest, I should say, not the twins. The twins are too new.
Well, we sat down and we started playing Burger Up, and it's just phenomenal, phenomenal card game. You start out with two stations, and they're bottom buns of a burger, right? And everybody gets four cards in their hands, and you can play up to three ingredients on either one of your burgers. And whatever you start with, these cards are double-sided. One faces you, one faces away from you. You might have meat on one side and a vegetable on the other, et cetera, et cetera. And they all have nice icons that go with them. So when you put your card down, whatever side is facing you is the actual ingredient that you've put on the bun, and you'll see on the opposite side the icon of whatever that is. So let's say that I put down a card that has meat and cheese. Meat on my side, cheese facing the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
So the meat is what I've put down on my bun, and now the cheese icon indicates that the next ingredient I have to put down on that burger is a cheese. And so you start to create nice chains. And so every round, after you put down three ingredients, you draw back up to four. And there's a variety of different conditions that you can do to boost your hand size, et cetera, and boost how many ingredients you play on any given turn. But essentially what you're trying to do is string together the ingredients based on orders that are common to all players in a store. And those orders basically say, hey, this burger has to have these specific elements before you can cash in on it. And every round, a dollar gets placed on those burgers. And so the longer they're out before being fulfilled, the more money they're worth. On top of it, you get bonuses based on how large your burger gets. So depending on the number of ingredients, you'll get paid 1, 3, 5, or 10 dollars for your burger, plus any bonuses that you've put into the burger based on the types of ingredients and based on fulfilling an order. It's very, very fast. It's really, really super fun. And on top of it, the quality of the components is fantastic. Great quality cards, beautiful iconography, really nice art on everything. I mean, I'm so impressed with it. It's a very light game with surprising depth, and it plays very, very quickly. And I'm having a blast playing it with a 9-year-old, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's great. And $10 for a burger, that better be a tasty burger.
So a couple of buddies of mine recently got me into Dice Masters. And so I picked up a starting box, and I've been having a blast with it. And it's that kind of crack that it's only 99 cents for a booster. So you go into the store and you're like, we're just going to sit down and play games for an hour. So I might as well, kind of pay my table tax, and I'll pick up like 5 or 10 expansions because it's only like $5 or $10. Right. Yeah. Next thing you know, you've got,
That's how magic gets you.
Yeah. Well, it's the same drug. It's the same drug. Because every booster comes with... all right, so we haven't actually talked about Dice Masters yet. So let me kind of describe Dice Masters. In Dice Masters...
It's the collectible version of Couriers.
Yeah, exactly.
Done.
You get cards that represent characters, and they have abilities listed on them. Those cards have different levels of rarity on them, and the more rare a card is, the better the abilities that are going to be on that card are. And those cards all come with a cost that is paid with dice. And basically, two people sit down and they're doing combat, and they're trying to do 20 points of damage to one another, and they do so by attacking each other with these different characters, which you have to buy into the game by rolling basic dice and basically paying for their dice to come in. So that's important because every booster pack comes with two cards and two dice, completely random in a foil pack, and that's where they really get you, because next thing you know, you're surrounded in a pile of shredded foil and dice, and you're completely hooked.
And searching for the uber rares.
Yeah, gotta get those uber rares, gotta get that red stripe. But the game itself is really good. You know who designed it?
Diana Jones Award winner Eric
Yes,
Lang.
Yes. So he's behind this Dice Masters Madness, and the game itself is actually quite good. I really enjoy playing the game. My advice to anybody getting into it is just go ahead, and if you're going to do it, buy a starter and then go into a one of the gravity feed boxes with a buddy that wants to get into the same faction, because there's lots of different types of Dice Masters now. And just get yourself a grip of characters and a grip of dice, and then you're pretty much set. You know, if you want to get a couple of boosters here and there, that's fine. But just bite it off and tear off the Band-Aid. You don't want that hanging around.
Or do it Magic style. Get a couple buddies in with a couple boxes or two. Open everything up and then draft it.
Yes, that's actually a good idea.
Yeah, that's the better way of doing it, because then you guys can focus fire on things.
On the one-player game front, Jessica actually was super cool. She totally saw that I'd put Friday on my Amazon wish list, which is this fantastic one-player card game, and she totally ordered it for me, and oh my gosh, what a fabulous, fabulous game. It's a tiny game, fits in a tiny box, it's perfect for traveling with, and it's this fantastic, tough one-player experience where you are Friday and you live on an island when Robinson Crusoe shows up, and you're basically trying to help Robinson Crusoe survive and beat some pirates at the end of the game. And
nice.
It is so tough, but in a fantastic way. It's a Friedman Freeze game, and he's just a phenomenal designer to begin with. And the fact that it just fits all into this tiny little box that you can take it with you, and you can whip through a round in about 15, 20 minutes, maybe 30 on a particularly long round, makes it just that quintessential travel game that you can kind of have in your briefcase or with you in the car. And if you're, you know, taking the kids inside to watch them do soccer practice or something, you can set up on a table and just totally have a good time while you're waiting.
That's very rad. Now, this next one on your list, I have literally double-taked this at least twice at this point, and then I forget that I want to go look it up. So Camel Up has an app?
Yes, Camel Up has an app, and it's fantastic. Carlos and I actually set up in a taco shop when we were doing our Saturday morning taco run, and we played three rounds of Camel Up. The phenomenal thing is it takes all the great pieces of Camel Up, distills them into this fantastic quick little app, and it's super, super fun, and it plays just like the board game. Do I miss the giant 3D pyramid and the wooden camel meeples and actually, you know, grabbing the dice and whatnot? Yes, without a doubt. I'd rather play the board game version, but that said, if you are caught out and you just have an iPad or an Android with you, this Camel Up app is phenomenal.
Well, back when I owned the shop, I played Camel Up when you guys were doing the old show for Extra Life, and I really wanted to get it. And that board game was out of print for the entire remainder of my shop's life.
I couldn't get my hands on it. It's a phenomenal game. It's a fantastic game. Looking at my shelf, I would say it's probably the game that has had the most action in my house, just because everybody loves it. The adults love it. The kids love it. And it's just easy to set up and super easy to play. And I can tell you right now, after a good solid year of playing it, no one's gotten sick of it.
That's very cool.
And that really says a lot about the quality of the game.
No, it's a great game. I played it. It's kind of like Scythe. Like, as I said in that review, I'm kind of dense when it comes to board games. I have to like feel it out in some weird way. Cause I'm like left brained or whatever. And, Like I picked up on how that game worked very quickly, and it was a lot of fun because of it. And what I liked about it was I picked up on how it worked very quickly. And then I very quickly through the first game of it saw just how deep it was and how there's just so much there. Like it's just something that, you can play it a lot, and it's not necessarily one of those games you're going to want to play like 5 or 10 times in a night. Cause it's very quick.
No, but you can machine gun 2 or 3 rounds in under an hour.
Right. And then, you can move on to something else for your board gaming night. But it's one of those things like, you could always drag that out for every game night and just play a round of it. Just, you know, kind of to like your warm up round, you know, it's like, we're going to play the serious game, but like, let's warm up. Yeah, it's always. Yeah, it was great. It was great. I really wanted it. I really want it. I still haven't gotten it yet. So this will be my year. This will be my year.
I see good things in your future, sir. And we also had a chance to play Ticket to Ride. With adults, which still holds up. That's the quintessential build your railroad empire game. And then recently I bought Ticket to Ride First Journey because so my 7-year-old and my 9-year-old were both really interested in Ticket to Ride, and I saw this at Target and picked it up just kind of on a whim, and I'm so glad that I did, because it takes Ticket to Ride, brings it down to its essential elements with a much smaller map, and it's just as much fun to play as the original Ticket to Ride for adults. But it lets you get these younger kids the I would say as early as 5 or 6 could probably really start to get it as long as they can read. And it's just a phenomenal game.
Yeah.
And then finally, based on a piece of news that we're going to discuss a little later on the news, I did an impulse buy of the Warhammer Quest adventure card game, and I'm so glad that I did.
Nice.
Another one-player game that I can play alone or with other people cooperatively against an AI deck. I'm so happy to see so many of these on the market because I'm finding myself much more attracted to them rather than the traditional one against all or all against all model. I like these co-op games. They're really doing it for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's better for me because if my competitive streak gets out when we're playing a game, I get mad and I got to like watch myself.
Co-op games,
you can just do that. Like I can get mad because I'm not mad at anybody at the table. I'm not going to hurt anyone's feelings if I rage.
No, it's the board. The board doesn't care. A deck of cards.
Yeah.
And this Warhammer Quest is genuinely fun. It's a great card game. It's surprisingly deep considering how few cards it ships with. And I was having a blast playing it, and beautiful art, of course, as you'd expect from Fantasy Flight, and based on the news, which we'll share in a little bit, I was worried that it was going to go out of print and get really expensive quick, so I just kind of impulse bought it, and I'm glad I did because it actually went up $25 overnight.
Amazon. My God. Wow.
So I was just like, score, that was a good idea. And that's what we've had off the shelf. What have you guys had off the shelf? Let us know by getting involved in the conversation online. You can always hit us up on our Twitter. Robert, what's our Twitter?
@ForgotMyDice.
And you can always hit us up on Facebook.
@ForgotMyDice.
And you can also hit us up on the Pinterest.
Yes, which is also @Pinterest/ForgotMyDice.
Not to mention, of course, ForgotMyDice.com, our home. So please join in the conversation and let us know what you've been playing lately.
Or if you've been passing babies around. Do you have a tabletop, board game, miniature game, or RPG that you're going to release for retail?
Or do you have an upcoming tabletop Kickstarter that you're about to launch?
We would love to interview you for a future episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast.
Send us an email to fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com to schedule an interview. And now it's time for us to turn our attention to the wisdom of crowds. This, of course, is our segment where we cover not only crowdfunding, but all the greatest news in the board game and RPG space. So tell us about the first one, Robert. This is on the heels of last year's acquisition of Legend of the Five Rings from AEG.
As we all know, Alderac sold the Legend of the Five Rings to Fantasy Flight, and Alderac wrapped up their involvement in it this past year, and now Fantasy Flight is going to re-release the card game at Gen Con of next year, which will be fantastic. Not to leave the role-playing gamers and the fluff people of Legend of the Five Rings out to dry for a year, they're going to release a PDF on DriveThruRPG. They say it'll come out sometime in September. As of the recording, I haven't been able to find it yet, so I guess not yet, but maybe by the time this is out, I will have a link in the show notes saying, here it is! But it is the Atlas of Rokugan, so it's going to take maps, fluffy stuff, no RPG rules, but just maps and stuff from the RPG line, and put it together in kind of like a travelogue, like, you know, like a photoer's guide to, you know, Rokugan. And, you know, you can look at all the stuff and look at all the maps and just kind of like, you know, steep yourself in the world of Rokugan, of Legend of the Five Rings.
Yeah, so I really appreciate it when companies do these little introductory pieces to help you get into the fluff.
I don't know. It sounds like a cool little product. I'll be checking it out a little bit whenever it pops up on DriveThruRPG. So, yeah, looking forward to that.
Well, and FFG wasn't done with news this particular week, were they?
No. They dropped the bomb.
They dropped this bomb just 3 days before we were sitting down to record this.
Yeah, it was kind of sad. Like, I like totally like investigated this because there were rumors about this little news bit for like about a month now. So like I did investigations and I dug and I was looking around for some stuff, and then I was so proud of myself. I had time to do this with babies even, and then no, they gave us the last page of the novel. It sucks. But what we're of course talking about is FFG and Games Workshop have parted ways. FFG will no longer be producing Games Workshop games under license, and it's pretty wide, far-reaching, like, what they are losing.
Yeah, they're losing a couple of huge properties. Number one, I mean, the first thing that came to my mind when I read this was Forbidden Stars, which came out last year. because that is a big box game just screaming for expansions, and that seems like that has come to an end, because that's heartbreaking to me. I love that game.
That looked like a cool one. I never played it.
Then there's the 40K LCG. That's gone now. They've got the 40K RPGs, which are gone. I mean, their catalog is
gigantic. Fury of Dracula? Fury of Dracula. That's sad.
Yeah, and let me tell you right now, if you have not yet picked up a copy of 3rd Edition Fury of Dracula, which Fantasy Flight released late last year in November, do so now, before it's gone. Because the 3rd Edition of Fury of Dracula is fantastic. Best hidden role game I've ever played, period.
Yeah, well, and the rumor is that Games Workshop might be wanting to get back into their own board games, which is why they're doing this, because, yeah, I mean...
They never really stopped. How many people can really afford $150 for Warhammer Silver Quest?
That's true, but, I mean, Fury of Dracula and some of their older classic games, like Chaos in the Old World, I think... No, Chaos in the Old World's new, but... Yeah, I mean, they got some games that they can just release themselves now if they want to, like, try to get into that market. And it's not a bad market to get into. Board gaming is huge, possibly better than their miniature market.
But you and I talked about a different theory, and that was that maybe the FFG announcement at Gen Con of the Rune Wars miniature game might have led to this.
It's kind of the question, did Rune Wars sour this relationship with Games Workshop? Were they like, are you making a competing game? Ah! Or my theory is that Fantasy Flight kind of knew things were going south, and so they kind of pulled the trigger on this just to sort of have something to put their resources into, you know, because
they've certainly been hinting for quite some time.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, we'll never know what the true story is, but no, it's interesting. I mean, it's sad.
It is kind of sad, especially because they've had a good working relationship for quite some time, and gamers have really come away with some great stuff.
Oh, the role-playing games in the 40K universe were great. Like, I could go on at length about Rogue Trader was my absolute favorite of them, because, you know, Rogue Trader, you were the captain of a spaceship that's the size of a city, you know, could have anywhere between 15 to 40,000 crew members. You know, I always liked it because it was never hiding what it was, you know? I mean, the adage about, you know, D&D players being murder hobos and killing people and stealing their stuff, that's just what you did in Rogue Trader, and there was no, like... There was no, like, tacked on, like, we're actually heroes. We're not bad people. No, in Rogue Trader, you are bad people just stealing other people's stuff. And it was awesome. And very Games of Thrones-y, because, you know, you're also nobles and noble battle. It was a great game. So, yeah,
there's a lot of good stuff that's about to disappear. So if you're a fan of the Games Workshop FFG combination products, now is the time to go run and grab them.
I mean, yeah, honestly, even if you like the card sleeves that have Space Marines on them, like, get them now, because who knows?
All that stuff is gone, too.
Wizards of the Coast today released their monthly D&D expansion little PDF supplement, and they released a brand new sparkly ranger class, because the ranger, I think, pretty much universally was kind of reviled by the D&D audience. They said that they've done a lot of surveys, and they have all of the class abilities of every class and every class path, like, on a continuum of which ones are rated highest and which ones are rated lowest, and the top 10 lowest rated abilities of all the classes in D&D were all ranger abilities. And they're like, yeah, we need to do something about that. People are not digging the ranger. So they gave us a new one.
I feel
and
like they might have overcompensated ever so slightly.
I don't think so. I think it's fair. Like, high level abilities are kind of hard to judge anyway, because high level D&D is so stupid and awesome and weird. But I don't know. I think it's fine. I mean, I'm actually interested in playing it, which is a welcome surprise, because the first ranger just did nothing for me. Didn't hold a candle to the fighter. It was like, why should I play anything but a fighter if I want to be melee guy? I'll just be an outlander fighter. But this one, actually, you know, they do stuff, and they have like a niche, you know, and they fill it pretty decently. So I dig it.
Now, this is in beta right now, right?
They've been hinting that they're going to release some sort of rules expansion. They haven't really said what shape that's going to take, but this is probably going to be in it, the revised ranger. But you can download sort of the beta of it, which they've done this before. Like Sword Coast Adventures Guide had a few things that were from these packets that Wizards has released previously, and they went through unchanged. So this is relatively final. This is like kind of throwing it out there, and if anybody finds anything terribly egregious, that will probably be fixed. But I would expect it'll look a lot like this. Like, probably 90% at least will be verbatim this packet. I don't know, check it out. It looks fun. I liked it a lot. And the pet ranger doesn't suck. Oh my god, the pet ranger is actually kind of awesome. I was like, ah, oh, that's so great. The pet ranger sucks so bad in the player's handbook, and this one's actually worth playing. It's awesome.
Well, definitely take a look at our show notes. We'll definitely post a link to this, and I'll be curious to see what they change based on player feedback. Now, sticking to the RPG world, Adventures in Middle-Earth, the 5th edition conversion of the One Ring RPG, is now out.
And it's pretty good.
You told me you were reading this. Tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, so basically, it's Middle-Earth, so it's got all that Tolkien flavor. So there are fairly significant changes to the sort of the 5th edition thing. For one, there is no sort of spellcasty class, because if you're up on your Middle-Earth, you're like, but wait a minute, Gandalf's a wizard. It's like, yes, but Gandalf's also kind of an angel, sort of. Mortals, normal people, are not wizards in that setting. Gandalf is also functionally immortal. He's been around for, I don't know how long in the fluff, but a long time. And so, you know, you don't have people blasting fireballs and doing the D&D stuff in Middle-Earth. So they give you 6 classes. Each class has 2 sort of class paths or archetypes or whatever you want to call it. There is no overt magic user class, but they have a lot of sort of, they have like a warrior class, which is pretty much the fighter. It's got a couple different abilities, and they've got one that's pretty much like a spellless bard called the Warden, but they're all really neat. And it's a really good way of playing. If you want to play D&D, but you want to play like a low fantasy D&D where there isn't just magic everywhere, it's a really good system to handle that, even if you don't want to play in Middle Earth, because yeah, you don't have overt spell casting. What they've also changed is they don't have feats, they call them traits. It's basically the same thing, but the traits are broken down by race. So if you're, you know, an elf from Mirkwood or whatever, you know, you have access to typically like 4 or 5 feats, and then they have about 10 that are universal to everybody. But yeah, it sort of fluff wise, it spreads everybody apart, because like Rohan, the writers of Rohan, have access to, you know, most of the mounted feats, obviously. And then the people from Gondor have slightly different stuff available to them. And the, you know, the halflings from the Shire have their own stuff. And it's an interesting way of looking at it. Like it splits the feats up and makes them a little bit more fluffy, and sort of makes your choice of being, you know, if you're going to be from Lake Town or if you're going to be from, you know, Gondor, it's a choice. Like what abilities are available to you will actually matter at that point. And it definitely makes sense
from, you know, perspective of the property.
Right. Yeah, I know. I dug it. And then one of the things, it also, the One Ring RPG is interesting because it assumes basically that you will be adventuring kind of like during the good parts of the year, not during the winter. And so they have this thing called the fellowship phase, which is once the adventuring phase comes to an end, once you've done your little adventure, you go home for the winter. And a year passes, and you're supposed to kind of describe like what your character did during sort of, you know, the off adventuring season. It was in the One Ring RPG where they had a super adventure that was set in the Mirkwood. The adventure itself takes place over 30 years. And the idea of that adventure is, unless you're playing like an elf or a dwarf, your character will retire essentially. And so during the off season, you're supposed to describe, you know, your character probably having a family, and then you eventually having a child, and then your child will take over and become your new player character for the later half of the game. It's got a lot of interesting twists on the 5th edition thing. It's definitely worth checking out if you want something just a little different. It's got a different feel to it. Like, you know, it's that Middle Earthy feel. It's a little bit more like, I don't know, maybe like a fairy tale or whatever, but I don't know. I liked it. It's very much low fantasy, which was very interesting to read, and they did it very well. I was very pleased reading it.
Now, this wasn't the only Wizards news, right? We also had some news from the Magic Front.
Oh, yeah.
That awesome trailer you sent me, by the way.
Yeah. Wizards has released a motion comic, I guess, trailer for Kaladesh, the new Magic the Gathering set. The pre-release will be later in the month, September 24th and 25th. But yeah, they have this great motion comic where, you know, you're going to the what was it, the Inventor's Fair, and like all the wizards who are, you know, like artifact crafters are going to get unrestricted access to the ether. And
that was neat. That was a great trailer.
Yeah, it was really cool. Like it, you know, coming out of like Innistrad, where basically Cthulhu showed up and it was dark and people went and turned into monsters and stuff. And all of a sudden it's like, come to our awesome fair and like, we'll show off our cool automobiles and stuff. Like, yeah, it was really cool. Like, I don't know. I'm really looking forward to playing Shift Kaladesh now. I can tell you that.
Yeah, no, it looks like a great expansion. My gosh, the art is just amazing.
Yeah, steampunk India, like that, I've never seen that before. It's great.
It totally works, too.
Yeah. Also, Wizards of the Coast and WizKids have teamed up, and you, gentle listener, can have your very own dragon head that you can mount, like you hunted a dragon. You can mount that in your own home now. They are taking pre-orders soon, I guess. I haven't seen if they've updated that yet.
Yeah, but that definitely comes with the obligatory pound of flesh.
Yes, MSRP is going to be $300. Given it's a dragon's head, the thing weighs 15 pounds. So, weighs 15 pounds. It's not a small dragon's head that you're putting on your wall. It's a, I mean, I guess it would be a dragon hatchling, I guess, from D&D standards. But still, that's
a monster.
Yeah. It's a red dragon. They're evil. It's okay. But yeah, I loved how they, in the press release, they're like, we suggest you get a professional to mount it. And I'm like, wow, a professional to mount my dragon head. How often do you get to say that in real life? Okay, and last up is something that I am personally way too much looking forward to. Atlas Games has come out a little bit more about their Gumshoe Ars Magica crossover that they're going to do. Right now, it's got the lovely name of Magic Shoe, which is obviously not final. They have called it Tales of the Questiers before on their message boards, but that's also not final. But it's basically, it's taking the Ars Magica setting and using the Gumshoe engine to look at it. And what you play in it is basically the Order of Hermes has an order of, you know, wizard cops, I guess. Wizard, actually, it's more like a Judge Dredd's, because they're judge, jury, and executioner. And you go around and you investigate wizard crimes and figure out what should be done.
Sounds like you're the White Council from Harry Dresden.
Yeah. Very, very similar to that. So, yeah, no, it sounds like a cool game. Like, I'm really looking forward to it. The latest episode of Ken and Robin Talk About Stuff had an interview with the lead designer. It's episode 207. But yeah, it sounds pretty cool. They were playtesting it at Gen Con. They said they had a pretty good turnout for that. And oddly enough, for how much people hate, how much nerds hate change, they said the Ars Magica community has actually been pretty open about it, because, you know, they've said up front, this is not going to be Ars Magica 6th edition. This is just its own thing. We're just kind of fooling around and trying something new. They did something like that earlier this year too. They released for the Fiasco RPG, they released some Ars Magica inspired, you know, scenarios for Fiasco. So just to do something weird, I don't know, I guess Ars Magica is Atlas Games cowbell. They're exploring some space with it, which is cool. So, but they said it's coming to Kickstarter sometime in 2017. They said probably more early rather than later 2017, but they basically said their document for it right now is basically a mass of bullet points and randomness. It's not like a fleshed out RPG, but they said when the Kickstarter launches, they do intend to have something where if you back it, you can, you know, download the alpha packet and start playing it right then. So that's
always cool. Awesome. I love it when companies do that.
Yeah. So I they already have my money. I don't know if you can tell by the site, but I'm a bit of a Gumshoe fanboy because we've reviewed all of them. And I will say this, I don't think the Gumshoe system is perfect. I think if you start going into what's wrong with a Gumshoe game, you're basically talking about something that Gumshoe doesn't want to be. And for what it wants to be, I think it's really very good for that. Right. And that is our news. Moving on to the Kickstarter.
So let's start off today. And today, let's start with another game powered by GURPS. Certainly not the first one of the year, nor I suspect the last. And this is Dungeon Fantasy.
Yeah, this one looks interesting. So basically, what they're doing is they're basically releasing a box set, which will be like hack and slash fantasy GURPS. GURPS, I've always had a problem with, because once I figured out what GURPS was, which is, you know, it's a system designed to let you do everything. But the problem is, like, as a GM, when you're making a campaign, you got to decide what options you are and aren't going to allow in your campaign before you even start playing. And which means, you know, you have to go through the gigantic GURPS character creation book and, you know, figure all of that out, which is an undertaking because GURPS is a very robust system. And this is basically doing all that work for you. It's like, do you want to play hack and slash fantasy game? This is the GURPS for you. This is your one-stop shop to get all of that going. You know, it's going to have maps. It's going to have cardboard tokens. It's going to have books. It's going to have, you know, a character guide with only hack and slash fantasy stuff in it. So it's hack and slash GURPS curated, you know, for you, which I don't know why this hasn't existed before. I mean, GURPS has been around for, what, 30 years?
Yeah.
And I don't think they've had anything that's drilled down like this to this extent from what I'm seeing. I don't follow GURPS as much as I probably should. But, yeah, no, I think it looks really cool. Like, I like the idea of this. And, you know, I mean, if you're going to do anything, you might as well do fantasy because, you know, that's the most popular RPG genre.
That's actually I've seen some sales figures that show just how popular the fantasy genre is compared to, say, science fiction or anything like that. It's a huge ratio of a lead.
Yeah, no, I dig this. It looks like a cool box set.
Very close to funding right now. It's sitting at about 84,000 of 100,000 needed with 17 days to go. So I think it's going to get there.
Oh, yeah, no, it's definitely going to get there. The question is, how many stretch goals are they going to cram into this thing? So, also, it should be said, for a couple of years now, GURPS on their website, Warehouse 23, they have been releasing PDF supplements called Dungeon Fantasy, which are, you know, built around this concept. And all of those PDFs actually will not be in this Kickstarter at all, but you can buy them all and just drop them directly into the rule set you are getting, because they, you know, it's designed around that from the looks of it. You know, it's like magic items and, you know, splat book stuff, you know.
Sure. So, well, yeah, I mean, no. the backing levels aren't bad. $50 gets you the game,
and it's a box set. I mean,
$70 with the RPG screen. There's a retailer level for $75. $250 gets you everything. That's not bad. Unless you want a private session at Gen Con in 2017, then that's $550.
And who wouldn't want that?
And if one wasn't enough, you can buy the second one for $550. And crazily enough, actually, there's quite a few of those have sold.
GURPS players are fanatical. I mean, it's been around forever, and it's a good system. Me not playing it has nothing to do with it being not good. It has everything to do with I just never ran into GURPS players, because it's one, like I said, it requires mastery, and I was always kind of the guy who would run things, and so it was kind of up to me to achieve mastery in a game before we played it, and just GURPS was too tough of a hill to climb for me. If someone ran it for me, I would totally do it. GURPS looks fun. I own all of the books, all of the current edition books. I've read them.
Now, this next project is something right up both of our alleys, since we're playing a miniature game and we need to paint our miniatures. And that is Miniature Holders and Grips. Now, I have to say, this is a fantastic product. It's basically a set of ergonomic grips, including one that has a nice big frame around it to help you kind of hold onto your miniatures while you're trying to paint them.
Yeah, it looks, it's right up my alley. Like, I need this little doodad in my life. It's very gadgety, you know. It feels like something you'd see in the as seen on TV section of your game store. But yeah, no, it's a neat little product, you know, and it's got like a clip. So if you have you know, like War Machine miniatures, you know, they come with the bit you plug into the base. I don't know, I can't think right now, babies. But yeah, it comes with a little clip, so you can slide those miniatures in there. So you just prime them up, and then you clip it in there and just paint it. And instead of, like, when I paint miniatures, I actually put them in bases, because, you know, I want to hold onto the base and not the miniature as I'm painting it. And, you know, by the time I'm done, like, any primer that was on that base, I have rubbed off just by touching it.
Yeah.
So, you know, this seems like, you know, the exact thing. And I like how it has that little metal hook thing, so you can, like, wrap your pointer finger around it to, you know, get a better grip.
Well, and they also show an example where somebody's using imagine a metal frame that forms a almost like a U from the base of the miniature up to about 2 to 3 inches over the top. And this metal frame, what you can do is it's completely adjustable and bendable, and you can adjust it and then use it as a rest for your brush when you're doing fine painting.
This thing's so sweet. I need some.
No, it's really well designed. You can tell that it's from somebody that's had plenty of frustration under a brush. And honestly, like, from a cost perspective, it's really not that bad. Now, this is coming out of Germany, so keep in mind that all the prices on the Kickstarter are going to be in euro. So we're going to talk about what they are in U.S. dollars, but it may not match when you go and look. Basically, you can get a miniature holder for $18 U.S. You can also get the miniature holder plus the adapter for only $4 more, about $20 U.S. And the adapter is that smaller bit that you were talking about.
Yeah, a little hoopty that you can stick your pointer finger on, which I need because my pointer finger always smudges off paint.
And then looking through the rest of the backing levels, I mean, there's nothing that's terrible at all. It comes in a variety of different materials. There's cork, there's wood. I mean, I got to tell you, there's just no reason to not back this if you're a miniature painter.
The only problem I can see is because it's based out of Europe, you are going to pay a bit for shipping, because we're getting that shipping problem that Europeans have in reverse.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think it's like what, $12
for the base level pledges. The shipping starts at 10 euro, so it's about another $8 or $9.
I mean, that drags the cost up
it's about another $11 or $12.
Yep, it drags the cost up a little bit, but then again, if you know some miniature painters, if you guys go all in on it together, you can save on shipping by getting it sent to one centralized location.
Well, and to be fair, you're investing in a tool that's going to last you years and years and years. This is not just a one-use tool.
We'll have a link up on the show notes, so check it out.
All right, so now it's time for us to talk about Siege of the Citadel.
So this board game is set in the Mutant Chronicles setting, which is that one goes way, way back.
And includes a fantastic Tom Jane movie. And by fantastic, I mean absolutely wretched.
But hey, how many miniature board gaming properties can say that they have a movie based on it?
I don't think we're quite to one yet at this point, because that movie is barely a movie. I don't even know if we could call it a movie.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Even if it's 0.01, it's still way higher than everything else, because I don't think anybody else has a movie based off of the board game. I guess Battleship does now.
Oh, and we've hit an all-time low.
But yeah, no, this is your basic... looks kind of Zombicide-ish. 32mm heroic scale miniatures. You're building dungeons.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward in terms of a game. It's backed, which is fantastic.
Oh, it's more than backed. They wanted 60 large, and they're at, like, what, almost 144 at this point?
Basically 144 grand with 25 days left to go. I got to tell you, there's nothing wrong with what I'm seeing here. It's a very straightforward design. The team that put it together is really, really strong. I mean, you got Kevin Wilson of Descent fame. He also did Arkham Horror, Android, the Civilization board game. I mean, the list goes on and on. You've got Eric Lang, who did The Others, Blood Rage, Arcadia Quest, Dice Masters, which we were talking about earlier. You've got Jay Little, creator of X-Wing Miniatures, Star Wars role-playing game, Blood Bowl team manager. I mean, there's a lot of guys working on this. Richard Borg, Battle Cry, Memoir 44, Battle Lore. Command and Colors, Siege of the Citadel. I mean, these guys are really huge, huge names in the industry, and they've all come together to make this game. So that suddenly really brings it high on my radar.
Yeah, and what I like about it is I've seen a lot of games get in trouble with stretch goals where they start adding in more and more miniatures. And, you know, unless you're Cool Mini or not, that doesn't seem to be a good idea, because it always just makes your game come out, like, that much later. So this one, they're just adding in, like, extra components and, you know, like 3D terrain and stuff to just make your board look prettier, more campaigns, more tiles, just more game, and not as much just like, you know, do you really need another tray of zombies? You know, it's not that. It's like more game to play, which I dig, you know.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about you, but I'm kind of at the point with miniature board games where it's like, do I need more miniature board games in my life?
I mean, I'm staring at my box of Zombicide Black Plague goodies and my box of Besieged goodies that I don't even know where I can park them. And I feel that pain.
Yeah. And yeah, this is just all like bits to make the terrain 3D and just more tiles. I don't know. I got some respect for that, because, you know, they're not just going to give you extra crud to just pad out the box. They're actually going to get you stuff to just enhance the game and make it better. And I don't know. I dig that personally. I dig that more than getting miniatures at this point, because it's easy to just throw in like, oh, there's another zombie sculpt to toss into this. It's like, no, here's extra stuff so you can, you know, add more equipment to the game. And thus you have, you know, a little bit more randomization when you play the game a second time. You know, I like that better personally.
Well, there's only two backing levels too. Another indicator that I love. $69 gets you the base game, plus all the stretch goals for the Doom Trooper level. And then the Dark Legion level is $149, and that gets you the base game, plus all of the Doom Trooper stuff and all the Dark Legion stretch goals as well. That's it. Those are the two levels. Just choose which version you want, and how much content comes with it is pretty much spelled out in the pledge level, and that's it.
No complication.
And no Tom Jane. Which in this case is good. Sometimes that's not good, but in this case, it's good. And now it's time for us to turn to a little bit of a Tarantino-type board game. This is called Vengeance.
Yeah.
Kind of Pulp Fiction revenge tale of the board game world.
Yeah, I was, when I was flipping through this earlier today, I was getting very much the vibe of, like, every hallway sequence in every Marvel show ever. Or Old Boy or something. Yeah, the theme of the game is just, you know, a revenge movie, you know, like Old Boy or Lady Vengeance or Kill Bill or name them, you know. Those movies are always kind of fun, and playing in a board game looks kind of awesome. And I love the cover of the art with, you know, random dude with golf club going up against obviously a gang of samurai of some sort. Or
yeah, I do appreciate the art on the cover of the box. It's unique. It's interesting. It uses white in an interesting way.
Yeah, it's got a lot of, it's very minimalist, which I appreciate. It's not very loud, but it gets its point across. Kind of has a Mike Magnolia feel to it. But yeah, this is a game. It appears to be in the same vein as the Mutant Chronicles. You know, you get your you build your board, and then you just go to town and wreak some vengeance with your character.
Yeah, I have to say this is another one that definitely has a distinct Zombicide flavor to it. I'm not going to say that it's a bad thing because it takes it in a very different direction. But definitely you kind of know what you're getting into. This is the tiles lay out the map. You got tons and tons of miniatures, and then you go to town. Slightly more variation in the backing levels, however. You've got $90 for the best served cold level of pledging, which is just your base game and the soundtrack. $120 gets you all that, plus one of the expansions, a new gang to expand with. $270 gets you the base game, the extra gang, and a 90mm scale collectible miniature of your choice. Pro painted in oils, no less.
Ooh, oils. How classy.
And then it just goes on into the more ridiculous levels there. There's a $360 retail level, a $480 retail level for the core plus the expansion. But yeah, I mean, your basic here is 90 or 120, depending. It's pretty standard for board game levels. And I got to tell you, if this is your particular flavor of movie or tale, this is not a bad fit. This looks pretty fun, and the component quality looks great. And then finally, we have a game that I have actually backed, and I backed it the moment it was available, and that is an expansion, actually, to Tiny Epic Galaxies by Scott Alms, Tiny Epic Galaxies Beyond the Black. It's new ships, new pilots, new planets, a bunch more stuff. Man, has this thing just absolutely hit with a thunder. $246,000 of funding, 18 days left to go. They only asked for $15,000.
I guess people like this game. I don't know.
I can tell you right now, Tiny Epic Galaxies was one of my biggest surprises from last year. What a phenomenal game. It came out of nowhere. I bought it on a whim based on something that a buddy of mine told me. I put it down on the table, and it's this humongously deep, almost, you know, echoes of 4X worker placement game, and it all fits into this tiny little box that you can take with you everywhere.
I need to play this game. It looks fun. Sorry, not non sequitur. You know what my problem is? Like, I'm really tired because of the babies, so I find myself nodding a lot, which just doesn't translate. I'm like sitting there, you're talking, I'm like, yeah, just nodding. And it's like, wait a minute, Robert, you got to like say stuff.
I've played probably maybe 20, 25 games of Tiny Epic Galaxies, and it just keeps getting better the more I play it. I really like this game. It was such a surprise.
Sorry, I'm looking through the goodies. I haven't looked through this Kickstarter yet. I'm a terrible person.
I totally backed it, so no worries. So it should definitely be said, this is not a standalone game. This is strictly an expansion for Tiny Epic Galaxies. But that said, you can get Tiny Epic Galaxies in one of the pledge levels. So $24 bucks gets you the expansion. $46 gets you the expansion plus the original Tiny Epic Galaxies. And then finally, there's a $300 level that gets you the title of honorary producer. And that concludes our news and Kickstarters. That is the wisdom of the crowd. We love getting feedback, so please let us know how we're doing by one of the following.
You can email us at fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/forgotmindice. We post all our articles there, so feel free to comment. Or you can message us directly via Facebook Messenger.
We also have a Pinterest page where, among other things, we post articles along with other cool stuff we find. You can find us and message us there at pinterest.com/forgotmydice.
We also have Facebook comments enabled for all our articles at forgotmydice.com.
You can message us or tweet us on the Twitters. Find us at forgotmydice.
If you like the show, the best way for more people to find out about us is to give us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher.
Lastly, for those of you listening to us from the Wizarding World, send your owls to Forgot My Dice.
The Wizarding World?
Yeah, they listen to podcasts on crystal balls.
Okay. And now it's time for us to move into our review. And tonight we've got a fantastic review, Seven Wonders Duel. Seven Wonders Duel is, of course, a kind of unofficial sequel to a phenomenal game from a couple years ago called Seven Wonders, which is a drafting game where you're basically building your civilization up and trying to achieve either a cultural or military victory against up to four or five other players, depending or more, depending on the expansions.
Yeah, I think it went up to seven, I thought.
Yeah, I think with some of the expansions, it went up to seven, too.
Jonathan, what is a drafting game?
Well, a drafting game is where everybody gets a hand of cards and they select one, and then they pass the remainder of their hand to the next player and get past the remainder of somebody else's hand, and then they select another card, and you slowly draft down, picking one card at a time, which is tough because you want all the cards, especially if there's more than one good one in your hand, but you can only choose one at a time. So they took this game, which scaled up to a large number of players, and they...
But you had to play it with at least three, because yes. There was no way to play it with two, because it just wouldn't work.
No, it just didn't work, because then the draft is kind of broken. Well, they took that basic premise, and they boiled it down in a slightly different direction, and they made Seven Wonders Duel. And what Seven Wonders Duel is a game where, rather than drafting out of a hand, you have a design of cards that's laid out on the table, some face up, some face down, and you slowly begin to take one card at a time based on an engine that you've created using cards that you've picked up on previous turns. Some of the cards in the first grouping are free, meaning that you can start to build your engine. But in the second and third grouping, those cards start to need some very specific items, not to mention cash, to build. And to do that, you need to start building an engine out of these cards with different types of goods like wood and brick, etc., different types of cultural items, different types of military items. And essentially what you're doing is building up your civilization and trying to be either winning via a military victory where you basically take over your opponent's capital, or you can win via a cultural victory where you just create a better culture.
Or, and also it says there's a science victory where if you have any six of the seven sciences, you immediately win the game as well. So you can, you know, out-science your enemy. I think it should be said, this one, what this game is doing is solving the problem of you cannot play Seven Wonders with two people because drafting does not work with two people. Ideally, for Seven Wonders, you should have four or more. This game
Seven
is...
Seven Wonders just doesn't work with low player counts. It just doesn't.
Right. But this game is two players only. This is not a game you're going to bust out at, you know, your group with, you know, when you have five or six people, because that's what Seven Wonders is for. This is for when you and a buddy want to square off directly and you have nothing else to do, or you don't have, you know, a big crowd there. This is the solve for two players.
So now let's dive into the game a little bit. Let's talk about first impressions. What were your first impressions of Seven Wonders Duel?
It reminded me a lot of Seven Wonders, which was good. Like it just... The feel of the game is always very important to me, and it felt like Seven Wonders, which was really nice because I love Seven Wonders. I've played a lot of games of that, and this reminded me a lot of Seven Wonders. It felt like Seven Wonders. It distilled everything that it needed just in a two-player variant.
Yeah, same art style, same concepts, same iconography, same pretty much everything, which is really nice because this is one of those games that you can pick up very quickly if you're coming from Seven Wonders, because you kind of get what they're looking for, even though it's a vastly different game.
Yeah, and oddly enough, like, my knowledge of how to play Seven Wonders served me well because, you know, the same rules apply, you know, in scoring and in a lot of things. You know, it's like, oh, like, when we got into the late game and the guilds started popping up, like, the guilds did exactly what I thought they did. You know, I was like, oh, okay, this guild is good for this. Oh, I have a lot of that. I will go after that guild. Ha, ha, ha. They did a really good job. They did a really good job of distilling, you know, what is essentially a game that is best played with a lot of people down to something that is very, very, very good and fun to play with just two. It was mind-boggling how well they did it and how much it felt like the original game at the same time, which was really cool.
Now let's dive a little deeper into the packaging, and I think this packaging is really an example of how to package a game, because it's really, really well done. It's a very tiny box. It's a very small footprint.
It's like, what, $20, I want to say, MSRP?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe $20, $25 MSRP. It's not a very expensive game at all, which is even better because you get so much value in this box. But when you open up the box, there's a thermoform plastic insert. The insert is phenomenal. It holds all of your cards. It's got spaces for all of your chits and tokens that you punch out. It's got a space for your military tracker, which basically acts as a battlefield between your two capitals, letting you know where the military is. It comes with a plastic pawn. And, of course, it comes with all the different types of cards. There's smaller cards that represent the different components of your society that you're building. And there's also larger cards that represent the seven wonders that you can build during a game that get you huge, huge bonuses.
And what I liked about the Seven Wonders is it wasn't just the Seven Wonders that we know and love. They give you a lot. And so replaying the game, you know, there's enough that how many are in there? Like 14. There's enough that you can play the game twice and not have to reshuffle, which is pretty rad.
The game takes place across three ages, and they give you more cards in every single one of those ages than you're ever going to use in a single game, which means that you instantly get some variation every single time you play based on what you happen to shuffle in.
If you play a game long enough, like Carcassonne, for example, like Carcassonne almost starts getting like card counting in poker, because you know what's in that box if you're just playing with the base game. Like, you just know. And because they give you many more cards than you'll ever need in one game, you can't card count. You can't tell what's in the deck because it's too wide open.
Yeah, you never know exactly what has made it in until the last cards get flipped upside down.
Which it's perfect because, it gets you that sort of draft experience, because you just never quite know what's going to come your way when you reveal things, which is it's so good. I love it.
So now let's get into the gameplay of the actual game. And I think one thing that I found very interesting, Robert, is that the game uses a very different mechanic. Instead of drafting, we have all the cards laid out in a specific order on the table. Some are face up, some are face down. The face down ones don't get turned face up until they're uncovered by buying the cards that come before them in the pattern. And even though we're doing this distinctly different action, I totally felt like I was playing Seven Wonders.
Yeah, it definitely solves that thing of getting cards blind, because some of the cards are face up, you sort of know what's coming. Like, you know, when you get a pile of cards, it's already gone around the table once. And then, you know, because some of the cards are face down, you also just you never know what you're going to get, which is also what happens in draft when some of the cards have not come around the table once. It's a very elegant solution to sort of that feel of drafting. The cards kind of go in alternating layers, where the first layer is face up, and the second tier is face down, and the third tier is face up. So, you know, it kind of goes back and forth, which is not something that happens in a draft. But for a two-player game, it works really well because, you know, you can see things coming up. It's like, ooh, I need to go get that. I see that up there. But then, you know, you get the thrill of, like, flipping over a card and like, ah, there's this crazy new thing on the board. Don't take it. Don't take it. Don't take it. Oh, he took it. You jerk.
Flip side of that coin, you also can start manipulating your opponent by taking specific cards, whether you want them or not, because you can do the math and force them to reveal the card that you want to get.
Right, exactly. Which is, it's a component in drafting games. Magic players, I think, call it hate drafting, where, you know, you take things that you know your opponents need just to not let them have them. it's just such an elegant design. Like, when you were setting it up, I thought it was the goofiest thing ever. I was looking at it and I'm like, this is stupid. Because, like, during the game, it just added that kind of, like, random factor in that was really cool. Because, yeah, you could see cards coming up. And, you know, like, once I saw what you were doing, it was really odd. Obvious to me what cards you were going after. And, you know, you force the issue sometimes you forced me to reveal things that I didn't really want to let you have, but you forced me into a situation where I had to let you have it. And it's cool that you can sort of manipulate these stacks of cards and these patterns to make your opponents have to do things. It's a very elegant design. Like, it's
extremely. And I think that's the strongest part of the game, is that there is a distinct head game going on between the two players once they are used to the game.
And that's what goes on in drafting. Like, that is it. And the fact that was able to translate into a two-player experience is amazing. Like, that,
especially when you consider that the base mechanic has changed so drastically. Now, as far as balance goes, we got a little bit of a mixed bag here. I think you said it best. It's a two-player game, so essentially you have the same rules, and therefore it is relatively balanced, which I definitely agree with you. But with repeated plays, I definitely found that there is a distinct lack of a good catch-up mechanic.
Yeah, well, you get in that problem in general with two-player games, because if somebody pulls ahead, like, it's not always possible to fight that back just due to the nature of the game. And Seven Wonders, the original game, was certainly like that too. Like, sometimes people could very obviously be winning the game fairly early on in round two. It's just like, oh, they're doing well, especially if you're playing in a multiplayer game where they're far enough across the table that you really can't influence them too much.
Yeah,
it kind of sucks. Like, you can just see somebody, you can see this empire. It's like, oh, well, there's Egypt. Yeah, they're going to kind of take over the world over there. Oh,
and
crud.
I've had a couple games where, you know, just because of the way the cards are drawn, I just can't seem to catch a break, and I can't make any kind of engine. And on those games, it's been readily apparent to me by the end of round one that I'm not going to win. And that's okay. you're not going to win every game, granted, but it is a little bit frustrating when you can just see it so early that you're in no position to you know, do well in the rest of the game.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the cost benefit of having so many cards, that it provides variation, because there's no way to guarantee that there are enough resources in the game for everybody to do everything, you know, and, or everybody, the two of you to do everything that you need. And there is that element of luck involved, you know, of just what happens to be uncovered and when. I don't think there's a way around it. I think it was either they have a very fixed set of cards that has no variation where you can, you know what's in the deck and card count, and, or they could have gone the tack of just having the randomness and having games over time continue to be different. And they chose that.
And yeah, but you know what? The game is over so quickly that I never get frustrated, because, you know, the game's over within 20 minutes and then you can just reset and go again.
And then if it happens a bunch of times during the night, you're just like, you know what? This isn't my game tonight. We'll pack this one up and do it again later. It doesn't bother me. And that's the thing, too. It's such a quick game that even if you have the worst experience in the world, it's not like you had to devote 3 hours and it was clear within the first 20 minutes of your, you know, initial board setup when you're playing Twilight Imperium that you're not going to win. Yeah. And you still have to go through the motions because, you know, the 6 hour game is in front of you. You know, it's like one of those games. So
the last time I played Forbidden Stars, there was a fellow that they got himself into a bad situation in the first round or two of the game, and you know, by the end of the third hour of a 6 hour game, he was just so frustrated because he knew there was no way out, and that's tough. With a 20 minute game, it hurts a lot less.
Yeah, the band-aid gets pulled off pretty quick, and then you can just move on to other things.
Exactly.
And if you really get that frustrated with it, then again, it's a 20-player game. Move on to something else.
So let's talk a little bit about instructions. And here, I found a distinctly mixed bag. The instructions have all the information that you need in there. Unfortunately, they're laid out in the most inexplicably bad order. They don't make any sense whatsoever. I struggled with the instructions for this game when trying to learn it, and it overcomplicates a lot of the gameplay mechanics, because once I sat down and I played it and I realized how it functioned, I was like, okay, this is fantastic. This is very, very simple. It's a very simple game to teach. They just do such a poor job in the instructions.
I don't know, because you just taught me the game, so that was all I needed to know. I didn't even have to look at the manual. It was rad.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that goes to kind of reinforce my point, right? You know, the game is not tough, and I taught it to you in, what, 5 minutes?
Yeah, and I won. Like, I got it within...
Exactly.
Within, like, us revealing a couple of cards. I'm like, oh, this is how this works. Okay,
it
done.
It took me 35 to 40 minutes to figure out the mechanics based on the way they're laid out in the instructions. The instructions are almost incomprehensible. They're just poorly constructed.
There's this rumor that for one of the issues of Spawn, Todd McFarlane like threw all of his pages in the air and then put them back together and said, look, my comic book still makes sense. Maybe that's what they did with the rules. They just took all the note cards that all the rules were on and just like went, woo, and put them back in order. It's like, hey, the game still makes sense. That's how good this game is.
I don't know. I can't agree that it continued to make sense. It was from a first time player perspective, not having anybody to show them. I was just very frustrated by the instructions. That said, there's plenty of help online that really lets you kind of get past that learning curve. And
oh my God, we live in the future. Like, why aren't you just on YouTube watching somebody else play this game?
Because I'm stubborn and I want to do it myself.
It's the future. We might as well have flying cars at this point.
Like, except I don't, so why should I use the rest of the future? You give me my flying car, I'll hop on the YouTube.
Okay, well, yeah, when I have a new game these days, that's my first stop these days. It's just YouTube. It's like, why bother reading instruction manuals when I can just watch somebody play and go through the steps? Especially, I mean, if Will Wheaton did it on Tabletop, I mean, that's like game over. Like, they explained it really good in step by step right there. And a lot of game companies have sort of picked that up. So yeah, it reminds me of the first time I played Small World. Like, reading that instruction manual, I don't know what was wrong with us. I don't know why our bag of hammers in our brains were not knocking together, but yeah, it was just not making sense. Then we watched this video and, like, you know, just showing, it's like you stacks of cardboard, it's just you have to have two higher. It's like, oh, durr. And yeah, well, just watch videos on the internet.
It's a sign of a poorly written instruction manual. I had an issue with the Small World instructions too, so that actually kind of makes me feel better, and I appreciate that.
But yeah, when in doubt these days, gentle listener, just go on the internet. Go on the YouTube. Somebody, if the game has been out for like longer than a month, I'm positive there is a play-by-play on the internet somewhere.
So let's break it down with the essential question, Robert. Is it fun?
Yeah, of course the game's fun. It's Seven Wonders is an awesome game. Like, the only problem with that game is you can't play it with a low player count. Like, you know, I think they say you can play it with three and up. You just should not bother. Four is pushing it. Like, 5, 6, 7 is where that game is at. And this solves the problem. I guess it solves the problem for two players. It doesn't solve it for three or four. But still, regardless, for a two-player game that's, you know, relatively cheap, it's an awesome little experience. You get everything you need in one box, and you get more than enough room. Like, if they make an expansion, you can just plop that sucker in there, I'm sure, and just keep going. So, yeah, no, it's... The only reason I don't own this game is because it came out and it sold so well, I couldn't get my hands on another copy.
Yeah, this is when I saw a copy on the shelf, I just snatched it up right away because I had a terrible time trying to find a copy.
Yeah, it was out of print for a long time. The company that makes it, I think, is small, and just reprinting is a bear for a lot of these little companies because it ties up a lot of their resources. And it's like, what are we going to do? Are we going to reprint, or are we going to make a new game? You know, how about this? If you are a married person and your spouse is willing to play games, like, there is no reason not to own this game.
Hey, you know what? I'm married, and I can tell you flat out, my spouse does not always want to play games, nor is she particularly interested in games with a crunchier rule set. I showed her this. She learned it in 5 minutes, and it's what she now asks for, and that's huge. That says a lot. From my perspective, is it fun? Oh my gosh, yes, it's absolute, you know, never-ending fun. This is a phenomenal package. It does have a few shortcomings. There's really no catch-up mechanic, but that's all undone by the duration of the game. The duration is so elegant. It's 15 to 20 minutes to get to a round of this. It's not tough to play. It's not tough to learn. The components are just right for what it is. And honestly, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better two-player game, period, let alone for only $20 to $25.
Enough said. Go buy the game.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. Episode 2's in the can, Robert.
Yay!
From here on out, I expect you to be a little bit brighter and a little bit less fuzzy with every episode as your boys start to grow older and sleep longer.
I hope.
Listeners, we appreciate all your patience as we let Robert work through the intricacies of the first weeks of Twins. Like we warned you last episode, these first couple episodes are going to come out a bit more sporadically based on baby needs. But we're getting closer and closer to our regular every 2 weeks schedule. That being said, I have no idea when the next episode will come out.
I'm sure we'll be bold and pencil in next, or, you know, 2 weeks from now to record again.
We'll do it.
I'll pencil it in. We'll see what happens.
As always, reach out to us online. We'd love to have you as part of the conversation. ForgotMyDice.com, of course, is always available to you. We are on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Pinterest. We're going to be on BoardGameGeek very soon.
And honestly, if you want people to hear about us, the best thing you can do is click on some stars on Stitcher, on Google Play, on iTunes, wherever you're downloading this. Write a review. Tell us stuff. I have not checked to see if we've gotten reviews lately because I've been a little busy, but that was something I was checking very regularly before I had twins. Leave us a review, and if you hate us, tell us why, and we will attempt to fix it. We will think about it. And I don't know. I got nothing. I got baby brain. I can't even think.
As always, we're always open to critical feedback. We realize that this is still in a growth phase, and we're going to learn a lot. So definitely let us know how we're doing. But until then, we will see you in the next episode in a couple weeks. And
party on, Jonathan.
Party on, Robert.
The music you heard in this podcast was Intro by Elefiu and Retro Funk by Persephone, both used with permission via the Creative Commons license.